This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. Today I'll be doing my out of order, better late than never, reading Otto Leopold's introduction to a Sand County Almanac. It's dated 4 March 1948. He died only 7 weeks later, fighting a fire on a neighbor's property. He's buried at his family plot in Burlington, Iowa. I will then read the first part of the October chapter called Smoky Gold. I hope you have some tamaracks turning gold in your landscape. There are some who can live without wild things and some who cannot. These essays are the delights and dilemmas of one who cannot. Like winds and sunsets, wild things are taken for granted until progress began to do away with them. Now we face the question of whether a still higher standard of living is worth its cost in things natural, wild, and free. For us of the minority, the opportunity to see geese is more important than television, and the chance to find a pasque flower is a right as inalienable as free speech. These wild things, I admit, had little human value until mechanization assured us of a good breakfast and until science disclosed the drama of where they came from and how they live. The whole conflict thus boils down to a question of degree. We of the minority see a law of diminishing returns in progress. Our opponents do not. One must make shift with things as they are. These essays are my shifts. They are grouped in three parts. Part one tells what my family sees and does at its weekend refuge from too much modernity, the shack, on this sand farm in Wisconsin, first worn out and then abandoned by our bigger and better society. We try to rebuild with shovel and axe what we are losing elsewhere. It is here that we seek and still find our meat from God. These shack sketches are arranged seasonally as a Sand County Almanac. Part two, Sketches Here and There, recounts some of the episodes in my life that taught me, gradually and sometimes painfully, that the company is out of step. These episodes, scattered over the continent and through 40 years of time, present a fair sample of the issues that bear the collective label conservation. Part three, The Upshot, sets forth, in more logical terms, some of the ideas whereby we dissenters rationalize our dissent. Only the very sympathetic reader will wish to wrestle with the philosophical questions of part three. I suppose it may be said that these essays tell the company how it may get back in step. Conservation is getting nowhere because it is incompatible with our Abrahamic concept of land. We abuse land because we regard it as a commodity belonging to us. When we see land as a community to which we belong, we may begin to use it with love and respect. There is no other way for land to survive the impact of mechanized man, nor for us to reap from it the aesthetic harvest it is capable, under science, of contributing to culture. That land is a community is the basic concept of ecology, but that land is to be loved and respected is an extension of ethics. That land yields a cultural harvest is a fact long known, but latterly often forgotten. These essays attempt to weld these three concepts. Such a view of land and people is, of course, subject to blurs and distortions of personal experience and personal bias. But wherever the truth may lie, this much is crystal clear. Our bigger and better society is now like a hypochondriac, so obsessed with its own economic health as to have lost the capacity to remain healthy. The whole world is so greedy for more bathtubs that it has lost the stability necessary to build them or even to turn off the tap. Nothing could be more salutary at this stage than a little healthy contempt for a plethora of material blessings. Perhaps such a shift of values can be achieved by reappraising things unnatural, tame, and confined in terms of things natural, wild, and free. Aldo Leopold, Madison, Wisconsin, 4th March, 1948. And now the October chapter. Smoky Gold, the first part. There are two kinds of hunting, ordinary hunting and rough grouse hunting. There are two places to hunt grouse, ordinary places and Adams County. There are two times to hunt in Adams County, ordinary times and when the tamaracks are smoky gold. This is written for those luckless ones who have never stood, gun empty and mouth agape, to watch the golden needles come sifting down, while the feathery rocket that knocked them off sails unscathed into the jack pines. The tamaracks change from green to yellow when the first frosts have brought the woodcock, fox sparrows, and juncos out of the north. Troops of robins are stripping the last white berries from the dogwood thickets, leaving the empty stems as a pink haze against the hill. The creekside alders have shed their leaves, exposing here and there an eye full of holly. Brambles are aglow, lighting your footsteps grouseward. The dog knows what is grouseward better than you do. You will do well to follow him closely, reading from the cock of his ears the story the breeze is telling. When at last he stops, stock still, and says with a sideward glance, "Well, get ready." The question is, ready for what? A twittering woodcock, or the rising roar of a grouse, or perhaps only a rabbit? In this moment of uncertainty is condensed much of the virtue of grouse hunting. He who must know what to get ready for should go and hunt pheasants. Hunts differ in flavor, but the reasons are subtle. The sweetest hunts are stolen. To steal a hunt, either go far into the wilderness where no one has been, or find some undiscovered place under everybody's nose. Few hunters know that grouse exist in Adams County, for when they drive through it, they see only a waste of jack pines and scrub oaks. This is because the highway intersects a series of west-running creeks, each of which heads in a swamp, but drops to the river through dry sand barrens. Naturally, the northbound highway intersects these swampless barrens, but just above the highway and behind the screen of dry scrubs, every creeklet expands into a broad ribbon of swamp, a sure haven for grouse. Here, come October, I sit in the solitude of my tamaracks and hear the hunters' cars roaring up the highway, hell-bent for the crowded counties to the north. I chuckle as I picture their dancing speedometers, their strained faces, their eager eyes glued on the northward horizon. At the noise of their passing, a cock grouse drums his defiance. My dog grins as we note his direction. That fellow, we agree, needs some exercise. We shall look him up presently. The tamaracks grow not only in the swamp, but at the foot of the bordering upland, where springs break forth. Each spring has become choked with moss, which forms a boggy terrace. I call these terraces the hanging gardens, for out of their sodden muck the fringed gentians have lifted blue jewels. Such an October gentian dusted with tamarack gold is worth a full stop and a long look, even when the dog signals grouse ahead. Between each hanging garden and the creekside is a moss-paved deer trail, handy for the hunter to follow and for the flush grouse to cross in a split second. The question is whether the bird and the gun agree on how a second should be split. If they do not, the next deer that passes finds a pair of empty shells to sniff at, but no feathers. Higher up the creeklet, I encounter an abandoned farm. I try to read from the age of the young jackpines marching across an old field how long ago the luckless farmer found out that sand plains were meant to grow solitude, not corn. Jack pines tell tall tales to the unwary, for they put on several whorls of branches each year instead of only one. I find a better chronometer in an elm seedling that now blocks the barn door. Its rings date back to the drought of 1930. Since that year, no man has carried milk out of this barn. I wonder what this family thought about when their mortgage finally outgrew their crops and thus gave the signal for their eviction. Many thoughts, like flying grouse, leave no trace of their passing, but some leave clues that outlast the decades. He who, in some unforgotten April, planted this lilac must have thought pleasantly of blooms for all the Aprils to come. She who used this washboard, its corrugations worn thin with many Mondays, may have wished for a cessation of all Mondays, and soon. Musing on such questions, I become aware of the dog down by the spring, pointing patiently these many minutes. I walk up, apologizing for my inattention. Up twitters a woodcock bat-like, his salmon breast soaked in October sun. Thus goes the hunt. It's hard on such a day to keep one's mind on grouse, for there are many distractions. I cross a buck track in the sand and follow in idle curiosity. The track leads straight from one Jersey tea bush to another, with nipped twigs showing why. This reminds me of my own lunch, but before I get it pulled out of my game pocket, I see a circling hawk, high skyward, needing identification. I wait till he banks and shows his red tail. I reach again for the lunch, but my eye catches a peeled popple. Here a buck has rubbed off his itchy velvet. How long ago? The exposed wood is already brown. I conclude that horns must, therefore, be clean by now. I reach again for the lunch, but am interrupted by an excited yup from the dog and a crash of bushes in the swamp. Out springs a buck, flag aloft, horns shining, his coat a sleek blue. Yep, the popple told the truth. This time I get the lunch all the way out and sit down to eat. A chickadee watches me and grows confidential about his lunch. He doesn't say what he ate. Perhaps it was cool, turgid ant eggs or some other avian equivalent of cold roast grouse. Lunch over, I regard a phalanx of young tamaracks, their golden lances thrusting skyward. Under each, the needles of yesterday fall to earth, building a blanket of smoky gold. At the tip of each, the bud of tomorrow, preformed, poised, awaits another spring. And that's the end of the Smoky Gold, part of the October chapter of A Sand County Almanac by Aldo Leopold. This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. Thank you so much for listening.